Nice to see us back.
Call Senate has to order. It is about 2:46 on the 12th of April. We have present today Senator Wilken, Green, and Olson, and myself, Dyson. We have a quorum. We're going to hear two bills, so we'll do it in the order that was published here, SB 313 and SB 48. And it is my intention that we both bills get heard and today, and we can take action on as we choose. And we will not keep people from being able to testify. If we don't get to everybody's testimony, then we'll catch it next week as early as possible. That would be Wednesday, I think. So who's going to be presenting SB 313?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Stancliffe. I'm staff to Senator Terrio. I have just a short presentation, and I'd like to begin by thanking the committee for holding a hearing on this bill. There's a substance that is picking up momentum on the internet called Salvia divinorum. It is the most potent natural hallucinogenic substance found today on the planet. It was confined to the mountains of Mexico and used as part of an ancient ritualistic ceremony by the Indians who are indigenous there called the Mazatec Indians. They considered it so sacred that for many years, literally no one really knew what the substance was or knew about it because it was to them sacred. Unfortunately, because it produces a lot of the same types of experiences, or I should say mind-opening experiences that are becoming again very popular today, and because of the proliferation of information on the internet, this substance is now legal in all but two states. However, seven different countries throughout the world have seen fit to either ban it outright within their sovereign jurisdictions or place tight controls on it. The reason that this is happening is quite clear. The DEA, law enforcement officials, people who deal with the drug culture know that any substance that is as potent as this presents a potential problem for people who take it. What's most disconcerting is that a lot of the internet sites that deal in this particular substance tend to use language and approaches much like the tobacco industry did at one time to attract young users. And there's no shortage of sites. There's over 10,000 different sites that you can get information about this substance. Three things have convinced Senator Terrio that this is probably the time to cut this off at the pass in Alaska. Number one, this is a substance so potent that only 200 micrograms, which is 1/1,000,000th of a gram of this substance, will induce a hallucinogenic state. 500 or more can induce a very serious loss of capacity, both physical and mental. Even the most experienced users who are not at all embarrassed to share within the chat rooms, which I visited on the internet, their experiences with this particular substance, issue two notes of caution. First of all, don't ever try this if it's your first experience with any type of drug, mind-altering or any other. The counseling given to a 16-year-old was, if you haven't yet explored some of the milder things in life, don't even think about this. The other thing that you learn is that even experienced users have had some fantastically horrible experiences with this substance. On the other end of the spectrum, there are people that think that it is absolutely wonderful, that will hold medicinal and beneficial uses in the future, and therefore perhaps should be controlled or restricted but not outright banned. Senator Terrio, based on all the empirical and rhetorical evidence found throughout the internet, feels otherwise. Delaware is in the process, as is New York. The Senate just passed in New York legislature a ban. Louisiana and Missouri have already banned the substance. And there has been a bill before Congress. It was introduced and taken up late, and because of some of the religious questions with some of the cultures in Southwest United States, they held the bill. Undoubtedly, it will come back before Congress for consideration on scheduling. Within our statutes, there are two schedules where this might fit. The first would be Class 1, which would be the opiates and heavy-duty painkillers. This fits more correctly, Senator Terrio believed, in Class 2 with mescaline, LSD, and peyote. It isn't often that you can work ahead of the curve with regard to substances, but as we know, the Internet's a two-edged sword, and we are able to glean enough information in a very short period of time to suggest that we are actually on the cutting edge on this one. So I would leave it to the members of the committee who might have questions about this substance. I'd be happy to try to answer them if I could.
Dave, has our health department weighed in on this?
Through the chair, our crime lab has. They've called Missouri and Louisiana that we have the equipment necessary to run a baseline and identify this material. Department of Public Safety, Cliff Stone couldn't be here. He will be here at subsequent hearings. Said to pass on that the Department of Public Safety does, in fact, support this move. And Dean Guinelli has also been alerted. He said that he did not see any problems with enforcement, primarily because you can't detect it in a bloodstream or through a breathalyzer. And in a cluster of typical sage houseplants, it would be very difficult to see. What you do here today, if you add this to the list, sends a message to everyone outside of Alaska, and the websites do warn each other, don't send it here, here, or here, because it's illegal, is that we're not open for business for this particular substance in Alaska. That would be the most pronounced immediate effect that you would make as policymakers. Dean said they'd intercept some, identify it, and then prosecute, and they would do it just as they do for LSD or mescaline or peyote.
You did a really good job of answering the question I didn't ask.
Oh.
I ask about the health department.
Oh, the health department.
Yes.
There has not been any evidence submitted to us by HASS, the health department, on this substance. Just the investigation has only gone through public safety. I'm sorry, Senator.
Yeah, and I see it has a judiciary hearing, and
yes,
and that's a perhaps better equipped forum to deal with the legal issues. Our purview here ought to be the health department. Do you have a companion bill going in the House?
No, Mr. Chairman, at this time we do not.
All right, so I'm a little bothered by not having some of our health officials say this is a legitimate health concern and so on. I think the evidence you presented is very impressive and so on and so forth, so that'll be the decision we'll make here before we act on this. Questions from the committee members? Senator Alton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Thanks also, Dave, this was one of the more complete packets that I've had a chance to go through, and it took me longer to get through it than it might have otherwise. Just a real quick question. One of the items in the packet is a newspaper story from the Delaware News Journal.
Yeah.
And one of the people that the journalist interviewed suggests that research into this particular compound, or I don't know what the technical word for it is, but that it could help scientists better understand Alzheimer's disease and mental illness that alters patients' perceptions of reality. And so I guess the short question is, does criminalizing it the way we've done here, does that get in the way of potential research? Would that stop the kind of research that this newspaper article suggests? I don't know whether the person that says this is a quack or not, but it would seem to me that one of the questions might be, does this do anything that stops research that could potentially give us some insights into Alzheimer's or other mental illnesses.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, it's my understanding it would not, just as we have had, we have discovered that there are some legitimate positive effects to the substance in marijuana, and that that is now something that can actually be prescribed. I would expect that as more research is done, both nationally and perhaps in our state, should those benefits arise, then we might be asked to take another look at this. If we're going to, and see how that it might be applied once it's identified as a positive medical substance.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stancliffe, can you tell me what the active ingredient of this substance is?
There's actually two, Senator Olson, through the chair. Salvinorin A and Salvinorin B are the active ingredients that come from this particular plant. And they may be obtained in a more concentrated form by soaking the leaves in an alcohol bath, taking that residual substance and either putting it in a tincture to be taken between the cheek and the gum, or putting it, lacing leaves with it, or to increase the potency. On the sites that sell this, you can get it up to 20 and even as high as 40 times the normal power through this process of distillation.
Are there any metabolites, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, are there any metabolites or other chemical compounds that are close to it that also would be affected by this legislation?
No, there isn't, as far as I know. One of the interesting aspects of this particular hallucinogenic, unlike LSD, mescaline, and peyote, is it doesn't seem to affect the metabolism quite the same way. This interferes with the kappa receptors, and not the same receptors that mescaline and LSD affect in the way the brain operates. It is a substance that is a very, very intriguing to people in medicine and science, but there is no doubt about what the effects can be if it's applied to the human mind in any quantity.
So at this standpoint, I can surmise that there's not going to be any increased burden on the medical community if for this substance or substances like this that may be already used in prescription drugs?
No, this is unlike any other.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I have one person that wants to testify. Jack DeGenerston? I'm sorry. Please give us your name and who you represent, if anybody besides yourself. Give us your testimony, sir.
My name is Jack Dagenstein, and I'm here because a group of people that I know, wide group, saw the press release last week, and we found it very full of lots of misinformation inside of it. And forgive me if I make any mistakes. This is like my first time doing something like
this. You're doing fine.
But we saw the press release, and there's a bit of misinformation, and we just found it kind of appalling that they would release something like that in the press. It's more of like a scare tactic almost. I wasn't actually at the first unveiling of the bill, so I don't know what exactly happened, but I didn't like what I read, and neither did some other people, and I'm representing those people in Alaska, as well as a larger community throughout the United States, and I have something prepared here. We believe that the act of making estivenorm an illegal substance is not warranted. Estivenorm is not a threat in Alaskan society. However, this bill, if passed into law, would be a threat to the freedoms of American citizens. In the following, I will cover topics concerning misconceptions of estivenorm, who uses estivenorm and why, and problems with the proposed Senate bill and what can be done about it. Many rumors and unfactual media articles have been spreading across the United States in the last few years. These stories lead uninformed people to believe that estivenorm is a dangerous plant. This is reflective of the falsified news articles concerning LSD in the 60s. The fact is that estivenorm is not as dangerous as one might believe. In the last month, there has been an explosion of sensationalistic news reports concerning a 17-year-old boy who committed suicide. Although it was never determined that Brett Chittister was under the influence of salvinorin A at the time, his mother blamed his death on estivenorm. No one has ever been known to kill themselves because of estivenorm, and there's insufficient evidence to support this case as an exception. It was noted that the methods he killed himself with would have made it almost impossible that he could have been under the influence of the drug at the time. Some may argue that estivenorm causes depression and that this is what may have caused Brett to take his life. The fact is that it has not been determined if the plant causes depression. However, there is evidence to suggest that it acts as an antidepressant. According to a case report by Dr. Haynes, a 26-year-old woman suffering from a severe case of depression found relief only in a self-medicated dose of estivenorm. It was noted that no conventional medicines or therapy were working as her depression level remained constant. When she stumbled upon estivenorm, she found that with a small dosage taken 3 times a week, it reduced her depression almost completely, with a Hamilton depression rating score close to 0. Senator Terrio was quoted in saying that estivenorm is believed to cause schizophrenia. This is absurd. It's not known what causes schizophrenia, although it is known to be linked to a genetic brain deformity that develops from birth. Symptoms of schizophrenia usually start to emerge toward late adolescence and early adulthood. It is possible that the intensity of the experience of estivenorm could trigger schizophrenia, but this is no more likely than any intense emotional or stressful experience. No long-term effects are known to be caused by estivenorm, and there is no evidence to suggest that it ever would. The toxicity level of estivenorm is very low, or possibly even non-existent. Despite what most people observe from the media, estivenorm should be considered non-toxic. Although the lethal dosage of salvinorin A is not known in humans, it is believed to be extremely high, much higher than any dose that a human would be exposed to normally. With an active dose as low as 200 micrograms, this allows the body to quickly metabolize the substance. And there was a research done on the metabolism rate of salvinorin A recently. I was unable to find the source, though, but I'm pretty sure it happened within the last year. In a toxicologic experiment, mice were chronically exposed to doses of salvinorin A, ranging from 400 to 6,400 micrograms per kilogram for 2 weeks. The results showed that there were no significant histologic changes in the organs of the mice, as well as the circulatory mechanisms. Because of the unique effects of salvinorin A causes the user, it is not common as a party drug. It is not generally sold on the street, as most people have either never heard of it or are not interested in the specific effects it gives the user. Some people may be lured into trying it not knowing what it is, but after they have experienced the effects, they may never try it again. When smoked, the primary effects are very short in duration, lasting on average from 3 to 7 minutes. This is followed by secondary afterglow effects, which last from 15 to 50 minutes after ingestion. At higher doses, the primary effects are intense, usually rendering the user incapacitated. The afterglow effects are generally very mild, but the user is competent at this point, and it is obvious to the user that they are in no state to be doing anything that requires physical coordination. Because of the short duration and the primary effects being, for lack of a better term, strange, most people do not seek out this substance in order to gain a high. People that do find after their first experience that it isn't what they expected it to be and leave it alone. The people that return to this substance further do it in a more purposeful manner rather than recreational use. Along with the atypical effects of estivenorm comes a different demographic of users. In a survey conducted, 500 random participants were surveyed about various different topics regarding the personal use of the plant. it was found that the average age of the users was 23.4 years old, and the average use within a 30-day period was 1.5 times. This information demonstrates that there is a much wider user base than just youth. With the common usage being about one time a month, it shows that this is not a substance that is used over and over for recreation, such as other things like alcohol and marijuana. And it was also noted that the people that had used it one time a month only had used it 13 times ever for the last few years. Certain difficulties with ingestion of Estevanorm also help change the demographic to some degree. Some people find the amount of smoke required and the taste of the smoke to not be to their liking, again reinforcing this as being non-recreational. It is possible to chew leaves of the plant to achieve longer-lasting, more mild effects. However, most people consider the leaves to be very bitter, and some are even unable to hold them in their mouth.
Jack?
Yes?
Could we make a copy of your written remarks available to the committee?
Yeah, I have one for you.
Good. And I will distribute it. In the interest of time, could you kind of summarize what you would like us to have take away from your testimony?
Okay. Actually, I'm right there. The problems with this bill is that it may help eliminate use within the youth community, but it also takes away some freedoms from older individuals, and as you can see from the survey taken, that more older adult people use this not generally for recreation. And there's some alternatives. Of course, there could be an age limitation that would even reduce the sale through the internet, something like 21 or something, and may reduce sale through the internet.
Jack, did you mean to imply that there are people that use this drug not for recreation but for some other valuable purpose?
Yes.
And those purposes are?
Meditation. I mean, some people like to sit down and read a book. Some people like to sit down. I mean, you could call that recreation, I guess, but it's more of like something to think about.
Do you have access to information from medical professionals that say that it's not dangerous for the general population?
A lot of this stuff that I have, I have three references that I talked about earlier, and you can look up on PubMed.org, which is a medical website, and it has a few medical research on there.
Say it's relatively harmless?
It doesn't talk about the harm. You can also check sagewisdom.org is a website by Daniel Siebert.
All right.
And he's not a doctor, but he's done lots of research, and he has a collection of research articles on his website.
All right. Have you finished your summary?
Almost. I just have a couple more alternatives that may work. The extracts are, you know, a big concern. Smoking the regular leaves requires a lot of smoke to get any effects from. So websites sell the enhanced extract, makes the leaves more potent. That could be made illegal, just the sale of that within the state. Or New York has also been working on a bill that would just make the sale of Salvia divinorum illegal. And all three of those things leave it more open for growers of the plant to have the freedom to grow it in their own homes if they wanted, or to possess the regular leaves.
All right, thank you. Are there questions for Jack? All right, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Jack. Thanks for being here today. You did fine.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask you, did you read in our book, in our packet, there's a page 3 of 6 from the Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia? Have you seen that, Jack?
I didn't see that paper, but I've seen the entry on Wikipedia.
Yeah, and I'm not going to read all this, but I would ask that the committee members read it, because it goes back to your testimony about what happens when you ingest this. And Jack, would there be anything that would keep somebody from using this botanical and getting in a car after they used it in the afterglow?
There isn't anything keeping them from doing it, but it's unlike alcohol, where alcohol, it takes your inhibitions away and you don't realize sometimes that you are unable to drive. I mean, it certainly is possible that someone could get in their car and drive, but they know that they're in no state to be driving. I'm sure if they were a careless person, they may do it, but.
Yeah, it says here that in low doses, spontaneous laughter and closed eye visuals and change in depth perception, heightened sense of color and texture, and then you had some moderate use, and you referred to moderate use in yours, time distortion, open eye visuals, many experience sensations of falling, user may experience fully formed visions of other places, people, and events. And can be very confusing. High doses, out-of-body experiences, gravitational distortion, vertigo, hearing voices. And then it says, which really bothered me when I'm thinking about somebody driving down the street, on the street I'm on, it's also typical that while under the effects of salvia, a person will not realize they've used the drug. So I guess those kinds of things bother me. And when I think about, now that I know this, why would I not want to put some clamps on Alaskan society from having this available to anyone that's not getting it for some prescribed notion?
It is true that at higher doses, the user does forget that they've taken a drug, but they also forget that they're a person, and they wouldn't be able to comprehend things such as driving a car, and that's part of the primary effects, actually, the amnesia. They wear off in like 5 to 7 minutes, yeah. And then you know what's going on. So it's the amnesia is very short term. So during the afterglow effects, they wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't have forgotten what they had done.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jack, for your testimony. I find this scary myself, but thank you.
All right. So, Dave, thanks, Jack. And if you'll make that available, we'll get it copied and distributed. Dave, would you come back up?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Regardless of what action the committee chooses to take here, I'd like your office or yours and mine to ask the director of the Department of Health to tell us their take on this.
Absolutely, okay. Mr. Chairman.
If this committee chooses to pass the bill out, then if they don't support the action you're taking, I will either ask to come back to this committee, because that's our purview as health, and if they do support it, and we don't pass it out today, then we'll hopefully, if we can get an answer back from them by Wednesday, we will take it up under bills previously heard on Wednesday.
You have my commitment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and you and I can decide whether it's you or us or both of us.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But we need to get after that if we're going to get some quick action on it.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
All right. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, move to report Senate Bill 313 from Committee with Individual Recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection?
I just object for a comment. I think what I heard you say, Mr. Chair, is that that either the sponsor or the sponsor staff or the next committee of referral will report back to the members of this committee what the response was from the Department of Health. Is that correct?
Yes. And if the Department of Health doesn't concur with the action that this sponsor, I'll ask that it be brought back to this committee.
Thanks. I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing no objection, the bill passes. Thank you. We'll now take up Senate Bill 48.
A simple bill.
And I think we have a new version of this that I hadn't previously seen.
That's true.
Is that the L version? Would you like that to be our working document?
Yes.
The L version.
All right. I'll move that we accept the LSO 208/L, Michelle.
41106 as our working document. Is there objection? Seeing none, that is our working document. Now, please present your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I know you don't have much time. This bill has been heard by at least two people on the committee, I think, before. It's been around, this is the second session. I think we have it to the point now that most people would agree that this is a good bill to have. And I have a staff member here that's going to present the bill, and I hope that the material has been given to everyone so that they might be able to follow along if they need to. I know there are a lot of people that have said that they might call in to testify. Most of the people that we have talked to are in favor of the bill, and maybe rather than giving a long testimony about the bill, you might want to ask if they're for it or against, so that we might be able to save some time, or might have time for brief testimony. But I would like, if possible, for some action to be taken on the bill if it can be done today. It does have another committee of referral, and that is judiciary. I would let my staff member present the bill at this time.
And please, go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Richard Benavides, and I'm the staff member to Senator Davis, who's the sponsor of Senate Bill 48. And I'm going to go over this for the members who weren't members of the committee when this was originally brought forth. So basically, in its simplest terms, the bill states that a public school may not deny any student access to programs or services simply because the parent of that student has refused to place that student on any kind of psychotropic medications or get a psychiatric evaluation or seek a psychiatric or psychological treatment for that child. But it also spells out what communications are allowed and who can do these evaluations and the protections against a parent or a guardian has against being reported to the Department of Health and Social Services, in this case OCS, simply because they disagree with psychotropic medications. Now, we want to start off by saying that we recognize that psychotropic medications are one of many treatment interventions that may be used to address any kind of mental health problems, and many times this medication is recommended and prescribed for children with any kind of mental, behavior, or emotional symptoms when the potential benefits outweigh the risks. Some of you may be aware that the U.S. Department of Education has made it clear to educators that medical professionals and not educational professionals are responsible for prescribing medication, but that the role of educators in providing information about a student's behavior is recognized as an aid to making any type of diagnosis. And in the 2004 reauthorization of the IDEA law, it requires each state to prohibit any state or school district personnel from requiring a child to obtain a prescription for a substance covered by the Controlled Substances Act, in this case a psychotropic, as a condition of attending school, receiving services, or receiving an evaluation for a disability. So we've taken from that same federal law the wording that basically states that, to clarify, that public school teachers and school district personnel may share any kind of classroom observations with parents or guardians about a student's academic or functional performance or their behavior in the classroom or school or the need for evaluation for special education or related services. But they still may not compel any specific action by the parent or require that a student take medication. Essentially, we feel that any medical decisions made to address a student's needs is a matter between the student, the student's parent, and a competent health care professional chosen by the parent. As in the past versions of this bill, nothing in this CS precludes any school personnel from using any other means of dealing with behavioral problems, whether it be contracts or saying you can't go on field trips if you're consistently disruptive or giving rewards for any kind of positive behavior. Now, I'm prepared to go over the CS for any kinds of changes that may have occurred between the last time you actually read the bill and what we have here in front of you as version L, but I have spoken to the Department of Education, I've spoken to the Department of Health and Social Services, and I feel that through the work that we've done in cooperation with each of those agencies, that we have come to an agreement with each of those agencies as to their concerns within the structure of the original bill.
Richard, I just saw the L version here a few minutes ago. At first glance, it looks like
it deals with a couple of things that caused me some consternation.
Okay.
Could you tell us what are the changes you made since the last version I saw?
Okay. First, we can start, if you go on the L version, if you start with line 7 on page 1, where it says school personnel may not, we've added the term unless authorized by law. Now, what that does is cover certified school, certified psychological, persons who are certified by school districts to conduct psychological evaluations. That's not covered in the statutes, but that's since it's otherwise authorized by law, that covers them. In the second page, we have dropped the original provision that says that they can't recommend a psychological, psychiatric evaluation. Also on line 4 on page 2, it says, except when refusal of consent causes a child to suffer mental injury or neglect, as defined in 4717290, that a teacher can't, let's say that they know that little Johnny was prescribed medication and little Johnny's parents aren't giving him the medication, they can't arbitrarily pick up the phone, call OCS, and make a report on that parent. However, from the statement that we put here, except for refusal or consent that causes a child, if we know that there are other circumstances involved, or if it's medically necessary that that child stay under control, it's necessary that the child have that medication stay under control, and that child and the parent refuses to do that, they can, you can still pick up the phone as a teacher and call in, because you're required under 47-17 to make those reports of harm. So that covers that, whereas in the previous iteration, there was some technicality whether or not can you still do that, or would I get in trouble for doing that. So we've taken care of it by putting in that language. And also, if you drop down to page 2 on line 28, it repeats again that nothing in this will be construed to prevent teachers or other school personnel from complying with those same requirements of sending in a harm. Also, on page 2 on line 14, there were two different portions in there that stated, as a teacher, you can talk to other teachers. As a teacher, you can talk to parents. Now, it was kind of confusing because it was in two different portions, so what I did was utilize the language from that federal IDEA law that says consulting, that the personnel are not prohibited from consulting or sharing classroom-based observations with parents or guardians regarding a student's academic and functional performance, behavior in the classroom or school, or regarding the need for evaluation for special education or related services, as long as they do not, again, going back up here, say that you must do this. So we covered it in that sense.
And that one I particularly appreciate.
And I'm glad that there was language out there that I could utilize. And we added behavioral health professionals along with mental health professionals, because not everyone is covered by mental health professionals as in the code. So what we went back to is also added behavioral health professionals, because some people meet those qualifications but don't necessarily meet the other qualifications as, what's the word I'm looking for, as mental health professionals, but they're still charged with doing those type of evaluations within a school district, or can be utilized by other school districts to do those types, under contract, those types of evaluations.
So, to the, you, Senator Davis, I assume that the problem you're trying to solve is the stories, has to do with what all of us have probably heard about feeling that children are being over-medicated and inappropriately, at least anecdotally, we hear about kids who are kind of being mentally put in recess for significant portions of their lives by being over-medicated with, in order to control their behavior or whatever.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as well as giving some clarifications for parents so that they know what they can and cannot do. And it is anecdotal, but there's a lot of cases that have been presented to me where people felt that they were being forced into doing drugs that they did not want to do because they thought they had to do it in order to keep the children in school.
Are there questions for the presenter, the sponsor? All right, I've got quite a few folks online who would like to speak to this bill. Are there any of you who want to speak against it? Can you hear me at the Fairbanks LIO?
No. This is Richard Warner. I want to speak in favor of the bill.
All right. Is there anyone that wants to speak against it? Do you, sir? All right. We're at... I'm sorry, come again.
Now, this is Fairbanks. I'd like to speak on the bill, speak in favor of it.
All right, hang on. All right, so
sorry.
We have a dilemma.
Fairbanks, and if we want to speak or not speak on the bill, then.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you coming out and weighing in on this issue. So we'll go off the record. All of you have come out to testify. It's my fault, due to a very tight schedule we got today, that you're not getting a chance to testify. If you'll submit your testimony in writing, we'll make sure that all the committee members get it. But it will get referred to another committee, and you'll have a chance to weigh in on it. And I apologize. It's my fault. Don't blame the sponsor. And once again, I apologize. We're in the midst of a very clumsy process here. Now, Chair, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee adopt with individual recommendations the committee substitute for SB 48 /L version. I don't recall a fiscal mark.
It's zero.
Okay, indeterminate fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill's moved and you're adjourned. Please wait to sign. Thank you.